Lebanon's Hezbollah and Amal resistance movements agree to attend cabinet sessions after a three-month boycott. Iran's foreign minister says a strategic cooperation agreement with China is based on a win-win approach to meet both countries' interests. And Britain's Labour Party leader says a Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, is unfit for office and has to go. Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to World News. Our top story, Lebanon's Hezbollah and Amal resistance movements have agreed to attend cabinet sessions after a three-month boycott amid the country's deepening economic crisis. In a joint statement, they stress that the only solution to the current crisis is to have a strong government that can win everyone's trust. They noted that Lebanon is facing an unprecedented economic and financial crisis, main manifestation of which is a devaluation of the national currency and a sharp decline in basic services. Movements have been refusing to attend cabinet sessions in a dispute over the handling of an investigation into the deadly Beirut port blast of 2020. Hezbollah and Amal also criticized illegal actions of the chief investigator in the case and his legal violations, politicization of the case, and lack of justice. Political commentator Paul Lurie believes that U.S., Israel, and their allies could be considered as one of the main reasons behind the crisis in Lebanon.
The situation in Lebanon has always been the government functions as a consensus or it doesn't function at all. Any of the various players, of which there are half a dozen major ones and many minor ones, can put a stop to any decision, can take action to prevent actions. Now, the outside player, this is an invitation to interference from outside forces. And the United States is especially, and its allies, are causing problems in Lebanon because of the interests of Israel more than anyone else, but also those of the United States. They want to do away with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is standing in the way. Syria is standing in the way. Iran is standing in the way of American hegemony in the Middle East. And the first one on the lines preventing, for example, Israeli expansion into the south of Lebanon, elimination of, destruction of the Syrian government and so forth, the first one is Hezbollah. And so they have decided that that's where they're going to find their target and try to eliminate Hezbollah. And so they're putting all this pressure on the other parties in Lebanon to destroy Hezbollah.
Iran's foreign minister says strategic cooperation agreements between Tehran and Beijing is built on a win-win approach in line with the interests of both countries. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says relations between the two nations are also expanding in all fields. He made the comments after a meeting with his Chinese counterpart in the city of Wuxi on Friday. Amir Abdullahian hailed China's role in ongoing talks for the revival of the 2015 Iran deal known as the JCPOA. He said Beijing has played a constructive role in supporting Iran's peaceful nuclear rights and its call for the removal of Washington's sanctions against Tehran. Iran and China signed a landmark 25-year cooperation agreement last year. The deal is aimed at strengthening the economic and political ties between the two countries. History professor and political commentator David Yahubian says the cooperation agreement between China and Iran can wake up Western leaders to the multilateral nature of today's world.
It's really very heartening to behold the positive spirit of cooperation. Especially in light of the ongoing bellicose actions and words of the United States and its allies to envision a really positive future of economic and strategic cooperation, consular activity, cultural activities between China and Iran. So this is truly exciting, and it's great to speak about a topic that is wholly positive. As Amir Abdullahian said, it's a win-win for Iran, a win for China, It is indeed a lose-lose for the EU and the United States, but largely by their own doing. So this 25-year cooperation agreement is highly significant, and it comes as well with the admonishment from the Chinese foreign minister that China fully supports Iran's stance in regards to the ongoing bullying tactics of the United States, and especially in regards to the issue of the meddling of the United States and its allies in the internal affairs of other countries, especially using the bogus excuse of human rights, is so often done.
Now, Yemen's Ansarullah movement has rejected the UN Security Council's demand for the release of an Emirati military cargo ship. It's accused the council of, quote, demonstrating solidarity with murderous regimes. We discussed this matter with our guests earlier in our news review program. Here it is.
Yemen dismisses the U.N. Security Council's call for the release of an Emirati-flagged ship that it seized earlier this month. Sana'a says that the vessel was carrying weapons and military equipment, not dates or toys for children. Yemen's deputy foreign minister says the cargo was destined for extremist groups who threaten the lives of Yemeni people. Hossein Al-Azi says the ship belongs to a country involved in a devastating war in Yemen. The vessel has entered Yemen's territorial waters in breach of international law. The Yemeni official says it is regretful that the U.N. body has turned into a platform for misleading public opinion and shamelessly demonstrating solidarity with murderous regimes. The Security Council issued a statement on Friday urging an immediate release of the Rabi, which was seized off Yemen's western port city of Hodeida. Hussein Abukhaiti is an activist and political commentator who joins us from Sana'a. And we also have Edward Corrigan, who's an international human rights lawyer, joining us from London, Ontario. I'd like to welcome you both. And Hossein Abukhaiti, let me first start with you. So am I correct to understand what has really unfolded, that the UN wants a ship that carries weapons that kills Yemenis to be released when it's known that the party that owns it has been involved in the, one way or another, in the killing of civilians in Yemen?
Yes, I mean, this is exactly what's happening. We have seen at the beginning, in the first day, when Yemeni army has announced that they have detained that ship, we've seen the amount of outcry from Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and other countries like France, UK, and the United States. And now we see the UN Security Council and the United Nations, they only actually try to help the Saudi and to support the Saudi war against Yemen. Yemeni army has released footage of that ship, which was carrying actually weapons and American armored vehicles and all other type of weapons, including guns, and I mean everything you can think of was on the ship. But we see that the United Nations actually keep a blind eye to the Saudi detention of fuel ship that has been actually searched by the United Nations and as well has been given a green light by the United Nations. And instead of calling the Saudi to release those fuel ship that has been searched, because in Yemen now we are facing one of the largest fuel crises. The fuel price has increased since Saudi has detained the fifth ship about 2 weeks ago. It has increased from 7,000 Yemeni rial for 20 liters to 22,000 Yemeni rial. And to show you that actually this blockade is hurting Yemeni civilians. Many hospitals are running out of fuel, and Saudi and as well the United Nations, they haven't said anything about the ships. Just imagine in 2021, last year, the Saudi only allowed about 5 to 6 ships carrying fuel to millions of Yemeni civilians. And to be honest with you, Yemeni, we have actually seen such move from the United Nations. We remember at the beginning of the war when the UN Security Council and the United Nations has removed Saudi from a list that killed children because what the Secretary General at that time said, that the Saudi are blackmailing the United Nations. That's why they have to remove them from that list. And on the second year, there was a report that actually the United Nations has thanked Saudi for avoiding children. I mean, I don't know what does it mean by avoiding killing children. More than 18,000 Yemeni civilians has been killed directly by the Saudi airstrike, most of them children. According to the United Nations and UNICEF, one child die every 10 minutes because of preventable diseases. Those preventable diseases mainly is because of the Saudi blockade. That's why I believe that Yemeni army should step up with its attack against Saudi Arabia, because the United Nations and all international community, they will only respect the one who will fight for his right.
Well, Edward Corrigan, you have on the one hand the request that's made by the UN that is very controversial when you take a look at what it's really asking, which was my first question to our guest there in Sana'a. And on the other hand, you have the fact that you have the UN making a motion on Yemen in this regard, asking for this ship to be returned, when for the past 3 weeks, the bombings on Yemen has increased by many folds, which would warrant a UN Security Council emergency session in order to address it in a country that is facing one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world. How would you assess UN's actions and positions here?
Well, quite frankly, it's nonsense, as the previous commentator noted, that the Saudis have seized at least five ships carrying oil and other necessities of life, and some of them had been actually inspected and approved by the United Nations to go into Hodeidah, the port in Yemen. And it boggles my mind that the Russians or Chinese did not veto this this action, and that if there should have been a resolution, it should have been a resolution calling for the release of the five ships of oil that were seized by the Saudis, United Arab Emirates, and also this ship. This ship clearly had a military cargo, and that makes it a legitimate target of war. The Yemenis could have sunk it and sunk all of, and attacked and killed all the sailors on it. Instead, they captured it, which shows that that the Sana'a government has is increasing its military capabilities. And of course, but it is hypocritical. It doesn't make any sense. And from the Yemeni point of view, it should not be honored. But it's, as I said, it's hypocritical. It's okay for the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates to seize ships, but whenever the Yemenis seize a ship that has military cargo, if they get attacked. And this makes no sense. From international law point of view, actually, the Sana'a government was within its rights, quite frankly, in my opinion, to seize the ship. But the humanitarian cargo of other ships that have been seized and even cleared by the UN, that to me constitutes actually a war crime, because it's targeting the civilian population of Yemen, and the Saudis and the UAE are trying to punish the people of Yemen for their fight for independence and to repel the invasion that the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates have orchestrated. So it's on the face of it, it's a crazy hypocritical resolution and makes no sense at all.
Thank you for that, Jose Noboketi, activist and political commentator from Sana'a. Edward Corrigan, many thanks. International human rights lawyer there from London, Ontario. With that, we come to an end for this news review. Thanks for tuning in.
The British Prime Minister is in hot water for breaching COVID rules. Now, leader of the Labour Party is demanding Johnson resign in the national interest, saying he is unfit for office.
Boris Johnson is too preoccupied defending his rule-breaking. And as day follows night, when it comes to the National Health Service, you can never trust the Tories. Rather than concentrating on getting through the pandemic and bringing down waiting lists, this self-indulgent Tory party is having a fight about a leader who they should have known from the start is not fit for office. We've got a Prime Minister who is absent. He's literally in hiding at the moment. And unable to lead. And so that's why I've concluded that he's got to go. Actually, it's now in the national interest that he goes. So it's very important now that the Tory party does what it needs to do and gets rid of it.
Johnson has been under growing pressure from members of parliament, including some Tory lawmakers, to resign. That, since revelations, he attended a garden party at his Downing Street residence in May of 2020 in breach of the government's coronavirus lockdown rules. Downing Street is also accused of holding parties last April on the eve of Prince Philip's funeral. Johnson has already made an official apology for breaching COVID rules, but he has resisted calls to quit. Ahmed Caballo says there is a lot of anger growing against Prime Minister Boris Johnson throughout the UK.
There's a lot of anger, particularly here in the UK, because myself and others were abiding by the rules. We were told not to mix with other people. We were told to stay indoors. We were told to avoid parties. Yet the very voice, that was giving these speeches, that were instructing us on these walls, was breaking apart, was breaking the walls, and trying to hide the fact that he was breaking the walls, and only admitted that he attended a party when the evidence was overwhelming and it was clear that he was there. Now, Boris Johnson's had many, many scandals since he's come into public office, from when he was the Mayor of London to when he's been the Prime Minister. There's been extramarital affairs, there's been misuse of public funds, many things, but so far he's been like a Teflon Don. These things have not affected him. He's managed to shake off these scandals one by one, but I think his luck might have run out, and this might be the scandal that is the nail in Boris Johnson's career.
Kazakhstan has put the death toll from recent unrest in the country at 225. Kazakh prosecutor's office says 19 of those killed were police officers. Numbers could be updated later. Violence was the deadliest in the country's post-Soviet history. Protests began on January the 2nd after a sudden jump in the prices of fuel. However, they soon took a political turn. Many government buildings were damaged throughout the chaos. On the 5th of January, President Kasym Jomart Tokayev requested assistance from the Collective Security Treaty Organization to restore calm. The military bloc has now completed its mission and will finish its withdrawal from Kazakhstan in less than a week. In the U.S. state of Texas, police are negotiating with a man who's taken a number of people hostage at a synagogue in Colleyville. Police say that all the residents in the immediate area are being evacuated. The FBI is assisting the situation at the congregation Beth Israel. Law enforcement official initially said there were believed to be at least four hostages. Hours later, Colleyville police announced that a male hostage has been released unharmed as FBI crisis negotiators remain on the scene. Officials say there have been no reports of injuries. Hostage situation took place while the congregation was in the middle of its morning service, which was being live streamed on Facebook.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Ocean warming keeps breaking records, which is a reminder that the world needs action to combat climate change, says Kenny Stansel, journalist, in an article published under the heading oceans hotter in 2021 than any time in recorded history. Stay tuned for more. New research shows that the world's oceans last year were hotter than they've ever been in recorded history, part of a long-term warming trend driven primarily by planet-wrecking fossil fuel emissions. This finding really underscores the urgency of acting on climate now. According to an annual study published in the peer-reviewed journal Advances in Atmospheric Sciences, the past 5 years have been the five hottest for Earth's oceans since measurements began in the late 1950s. Since the late 1980s, oceans have been warming 8 times faster than they did during the preceding decades, and 2021 marked the third consecutive year in which the previous record for annual energy absorption was shattered. These trends, the paper makes clear, are due to an increase in anthropogenic greenhouse gas concentrations. We want to stress that global warming is actually ocean warming, and ocean warming has serious consequences. Li-Jing Cheng, a lead author of the report and professor of environmental science at the Institute of Atmospheric Physics at the Chinese Academy of Sciences, told CNN, "Ocean warming keeps breaking records, which is a reminder that the world needs action to combat climate change." The research on rising ocean heat content comes one day after the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service published an assessment showing that the past 7 years have been the hottest in recorded history. Like rising global surface air temperatures, the ongoing ocean warming pattern is caused by carbon dioxide and methane emissions, researchers say. Greenhouse gas pollution has surged over the past 2 centuries, due largely to fossil fuel-powered capitalism and its insatiable profit motive. As excess heat is trapped in the planet's atmosphere, oceans absorb 90% of it, leading to a sharp increase in ocean heat content, the paper explains. The impacts are perhaps subtle but profound. Kevin Trenberth, a co-author of the New Ocean Report and scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado, told CNN, adding, "To stop this trend, we really need to get to net zero emissions, and many countries have plans, but not enough actions to support those." Before and during the recent COP26 climate summit, many governments pledged to reduce planet heating pollution in the coming years. But new data showing a steady increase in greenhouse gas emissions and atmospheric concentrations reveals that empty promises won't be enough to avert the climate emergency's most catastrophic consequences. If policymakers fail to take swift and robust action to decarbonize the world's energy system and economy, scientists warn ocean heat content will continue to climb, further exacerbating extreme weather disasters that are already increasing in frequency, duration, and intensity. Warmer oceans supercharge weather patterns to create more powerful storms, hurricanes, and intense rainfall, which leads to deadly flooding, CNN noted, pointing to Hurricane Ida's devastating effects, along the ensuing inundation of New York City's subway system, and Super Typhoon Rai, which killed hundreds of people in the Philippines over the holidays. The increase in ocean heat also raises air temperatures, allowing more moisture to enter the warmer atmosphere, according to the Washington Post. For every 1.8 degrees of warming, heavy rain events will intensify by about 7%. 2021 marked one of the wettest years on record for the East Coast, thanks to a slew of tropical storms and summer thunderstorms. The unusual December tornadoes that struck several states can also be traced back to the warm waters. In December, record warm temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico created an atmosphere more reminiscent of spring than winter. As such, two tornado outbreaks occurred in the southern and central United States in the same week. Moreover, higher ocean temperatures threatened to disrupt marine life, which supplies a quarter of the world's protein and put millions of people at risk of accelerated sea level rise. Ocean warming is destabilizing Antarctic ice shelves from underneath, which could lead to the collapse of large pieces of ice sheet, such as the Thwaites Glacier, threatening massive sea level rise. Michael Mann, a climate scientist at Pennsylvania State University and one of the authors of the study, told the Post, adding, "This finding really underscores the urgency of acting on climate now." According to reports, as the oceans heat up, the water expands and sea level rises. Chang said about one-third of the total sea level rise during the 20th century was due to ocean warming alone. In addition to more high tide flooding, sea level rise threatens coastal freshwater supply with saltwater intrusion and makes coastal communities and infrastructure more vulnerable to storm surge. Change said part of the reason action is so urgently needed is because the oceans will continue warming for decades after fossil fuel emissions are slashed. As Trenberth explained, the oceans are slow to respond, which is why we must prepare better and build resilience now. The dangers associated with ocean warming, states the paper, should be incorporated into climate risk assessments, adaptation and mitigation, and be reflected in engineering design, building codes, and modifications to coastal development plans.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. You're listening to I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Murtaza and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sayyid Murtaza, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Thank you very much for inviting.
Thank you very much again for accepting my invitation to the program Viewpoints. Today we want to talk about the personality of Jesus Christ, or Isa ibn Maryam, Hazrat Masih. Also, these are the titles that are used for Prophet of Allah, and also Lady Mary or Hazrat Maryam, as pictured in the religion of Islam and the Quran, and the respect that Islam had for these two very dear personalities. Sayyid Mursa, let's start with you, brother, how the religion of Islam looked at the very personality of Hazrat Masih.
Thank you very much. You know, Jesus, an English name,
yes,
and Mary, both are very special characters, and they have a special status, actually, in the religion of Islam, because these two characters have been compared to many other, you know, characters around the world, and their names have been many times mentioned and brought in the Book of Islam, Quran. So when Islam is bringing these two names and is quoting on them and is talking about their lifestyles and is providing the whole humanity some information how these people were faithful to God, so it shows that the religion of Islam is not only against Jesus and Mary, but also is supporting them and is asking people to respect them highly.
Yes.
So this is a picture that Islam draws of these two great personalities. Jesus is the prophet to God.
Yes.
And God revealed even a book, Gospel, to Jesus.
Yes.
So it shows that Jesus is one of the descendants of Abraham.
Yes.
So it shows that the prophet of Islam and Jesus both have their, you know, backgrounds the same.
Yes.
So it shows that Islam has compared Jesus and Mary with many other personalities, and the great respect has been given to them.
That's right. But Sayyid Mohsen, the look that even some of the Christian communities has at their own prophets and their books is very much different from what the religion of Islam has. And this makes a question that who knows better its religion? You know, the followers of the same religion or the followers of the religion that comes, you know, so many years after that? What's your answer to that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, when we talk about the Islam, Islam is not a separate religion from what Jesus Christ brought for the people of that time. We should bear in mind that the Judaism or Christianity, this word Christianity or Judaism,
yes,
this is a word which was made by people themselves, and not this name wasn't put by the prophets over the people. For example, Jesus did not said like whoever will follow me or whoever I'm preaching, they are Christians.
Okay.
This deviation and the yes. names were put by the people themselves.
Yes.
Whereas in the Quran, Allah says, Bani Israel.
Okay.
Okay? There's no Judaism. And obviously, when we see this, like the people who later put a specific name for themselves because they're attaching themselves to someone. So they got the name of Christianity and the Judaism. When we talk about the Islam, we have many verses in the Quran, and there are many proves in the Quran, the verses that say, like, all the prophets who came, they all brought one thing, and that was Islam itself. Means submitting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Islam in its literal meaning, submitting. And Muslim also means, or the Muslim, when we say Muslim, it means the one who submits.
Yes.
So all the prophets, they asked their people to submit to one God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
And that was the main theme of every single prophet. So when we say, like, do we know more? Does Islam knows more, or the people who are following? We should also look at the history that the gospel which brother has referred to, when it was written. It was written later, like after like 400 years
okay.
of Jesus. Like,
you mean this is not the same text that was revealed?
No, it wasn't the same text which was said by the Jesus. It
okay.
was written 400 years after that.
Okay.
And the Old Testament that we have, it was written 1,000 years after the Moses.
Okay.
So we need to look at the historical aspect as well. Whereas the Quran, when we're talking about the Quran itself, it was written at the time of the prophet, and he dictated the verses which he used to reveal.
Okay.
So I don't think this is a right question, like if we want to say, or it is not right to say,
okay.
like the Muslims do not know about the Jesus because they are not the follower. We are the hard follower of Jesus and Moses
yes.
and Abraham as well, because
yes.
they are our prophets. And to become a Muslim must believe in 124,000 prophets,
okay.
from which there is a Jesus and there is Moses. And in the Quran, we can
yes.
see many times Allah has said, Isa ibn Maryam. He refers
yes.
to the Jesus, son of Mary.
That's right.
And also to the prophet Abraham and the Moses. And we know that the Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they all are the Abrahamic religions. So when the main person who's like, we call ourselves Abrahamic, so we all refer back to Ibrahim alayhi salam.
And the monotheistic wonder religions all across the world. But say, Murtaza, you know, the question is now, we must have enough knowledge about our previous religions too, you know, as a Muslim. And this is when maybe some of the Muslims around the world does not have enough knowledge about their own religions and the details around. And I think this gives us a kind of authenticity about how the religions were revealed to the prophets of Allah during the history, and how the religion of Islam could complete the previous versions of the religions, isn't so?
You know, historically talking, everyone needs actually to learn a lesson from history. And when it comes to speaking about religions and the background of religions, and the religions that were actually before and after one another. So let's look at Jesus Christ and his mother Mary in the Book of Islam. And we know that the Book of Islam, Quran specifically, has put a great emphasis on Jesus' presence in society and Mary in society as well. So, you know, these two acted strongly like messengers, and they actually received messages from God, and then it was disseminated and distributed among people. So the same two roles have been, you know, followed and have been taken by Jesus Christ and his mother. So it shows a footstep to all of us that we need to follow in their footsteps,
yes.
Like we Muslims must follow in footsteps of our prophets and all our infallible imams.
That's right.
So it shows to all of us that what has been preached, it must be practiced.
That's right.
So unfortunately, we don't have this. In Christianity, unfortunately, we have a lot of rules that most of them have been overlooked by Christians.
Yes.
And in Judaism, we have the same thing, because I had my personal studies related to these factors.
Okay.
We have commonalities, we have similarities between religions, but unfortunately, those rules, the very effective rules, have been overlooked by the followers. And it shows that Islam as a religion has a better understanding, has a better description of the role of Jesus
right.
Christ
okay.
and his mother.
That's right.
So it shows that people need to learn a very good lesson from
That's
the
right.
history
That's right.
and look at the picture how Islam
okay.
actually created
That's right.
of Jesus Christ and his mother.
That's right. But Sayyid Mohsen, what was the main reason of revealing such ayahs to the Prophet of Islam in Arab Peninsula about the previous prophets, especially Prophet Masih, you know, Ibn Maryam, Jesus Christ, and Lady Mary? This is really a great question to be asked, you know, that what was the main reason? I mean, what is the use? For example, the ignorant Arabs, the Jahiliyyah Arab on that time, being familiar with the previous prophets, was there any intention behind that?
Well, first of all, let me just make clear that when we talk about the Arabs, the way you said jahil or ignorant.
Sorry, no, at the time of Jahiliyyah, sorry.
Even when we use the word Jahiliyyah,
yes.
that does not mean they were ignorant. You know, they had the best poets, and when they used to hear a poem from someone, they used to memorize it at the spot.
Okay.
So they were intelligent at
yes.
that time. The jahalat is something else. The jahalat we refer because they were worshipping idols.
Okay.
They were not worshipping the God and the religions, the Abrahamic religions. That's why, you know, they were in the jahala, in the darkness. This jahala means darkness, not the ignorance.
Okay.
That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing is, when we look at the prophets, we see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent 124,000 prophets. But we don't see their names in the Quran. Not all of them.
Yes.
The answer is, if the Quran was the book of history, then you would find all the names with their date of birth, I don't know, date of demise, and the place where they were. Whereas the Quran is the book of guidance. It has revealed to give guidance and give lesson to the people, to take people towards the right path. Therefore, those prophets who are mentioned in the Quran, number one, they are Ulul Azm. Like all the Ulul Azm, like the, you can say, the supreme prophets. There are six of them. But we have like Prophet Nuh, Prophet Abraham, Prophet Musa, Prophet Jesus, Prophet Muhammad, and Prophet Adam alayhi salam, the first prophet. So these prophets, six prophets, they're Ulul Azm basically. Or if some, like, according to some, they don't count Prophet Adam alayhi salam, then we have five.
Plus,
Prophet Adam.
Five account is right too.
All these prophets are mentioned.
Yes.
Number one. Number two, the rest of the prophets, like Prophet Khizr and other prophets, why they're discussed in the Quran? Because this book is book of guidance. So Allah needs to give guidance. Therefore, these prophets who are mentioned, all of them, they were the, we can say, like, they have all those characters which the rest of the prophets from 124,000 prophets had. And it was, we can say, they have it collectively in themselves. And all the characters which all the prophets from Adam alayhi salam till Jesus had, all of them were in the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So we have these narrations and these things. So why the Jesus has been discussed in the Quran is because, number one, the followers of that religion, Christianity, are still in the world. They were at that time, at the time of the Prophet. Similarly, the story of the Musa alayhi salam of Bani Israel, it is also mentioned. The others as well.
That's right.
The polytheists, the stories of the polytheists are also mentioned. Okay. Like mushrikeen, the idol yes. worshippers, and all those. So basically, it's because we have many people who are still the followers of such prophets, yes. those prophets, number one. Number two, because these prophets, the characteristics of these prophets, this were in a way that they have become a role model, not for the people of their time, but for the people even yes. after them. And because there's many discussions, especially, in the Christianity, they believe that the Jesus is Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they believe.
Trinity.
Yeah, Trinity. Yes. They believe that Jesus is Son of God. On the other hand, in the Quran, we have seen, like in the history as well, that Mubahila has happened between the Muslims and the Christians.
Christians, that's right.
The main base was that there were some Christians who came from Najran to Medina to see what this prophet, new prophet is saying. And when they came there, they said to the prophet that we believe in Jesus, Son of God. And the Prophet Muhammad said, I believe in Jesus, Prophet of God.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you are basically reducing the status of the Jesus
yes.
from being son to the prophet, and you made him a servant of God. He's not the servant, he is the Son of God.
Okay.
And then prophet argued, a prophet said, what do you believe? What is your belief about the Adam alayhi salam? They said, he was the servant of God. Then the prophet said, Adam neither had the father nor mother. So he should enjoy that status of being the Son of God, whereas Jesus had the mother at least. So these were the arguments. So yes. why Jesus is there? Because even in the Quran, we have the verse that Jesus has said, O Allah, I never said them that I'm your son. I'm your prophet, and you need to judge between us on the day of judgment.
Okay.
So the other reason, the second reason is because of the many followers of such religions. Therefore, it is necessary to talk about such prophets so that these people can come back to the right path.
That's right.
And the deviation which they had from the right religion,
yes.
they should basically refer back. And that's why the Quran is talking about the Jesus alayhi salam, the Virgin Mary, the role of Gabriel as yes. an angel of yes. revelation, and the other prophets as well.
That's all right. And really, there must be a lesson in all these life accounts of the previous prophets in the Holy Quran for not only the Muslims, but also, you know, the people of other generations who want to be familiar with their own, historical account of the life of the prophets and the great personalities like Lady Mary. And, you know, Lady Mary, you know, has really a special status. She's believed by the Muslims to be among the outstanding role models for the ladies all around the world, isn't it, Sayyid Mirza?
Of course, yes. Role models and these great characters must have something to teach us. And if we can't find a lesson to learn from them, I don't think we can call them role models.
Yes.
And the Book of Islam is full of stories about these great characters. Jesus Christ himself and his mother, Lady Mary, both of these two names have been mentioned many times. Specifically, Lady Mary, I think her name has been mentioned over 34, 35 times. And it shows her great status in the Book of Islam. So these two characters, not only for Christians, but also for all humanity, have something to deliver. So in today's world, I think the followers of Islam and the followers of all religions must look into the private, social, and personal lifestyles of these two characters, because certainly we will find a lot of merits and advantages that we can pick up and use them in our own life. So I don't think it is right and correct to say that Muslims, for example, should not celebrate the birthday of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So it doesn't show that Muslims are following the Christianity. It shows that they show their great respect to the birth of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So today is the Jesus birthday. So
yeah, December 25th, that's right.
So all Muslims must respect.
Yes.
And if they celebrate, I don't think it's wrong.
Yes.
It's not because of the Christianity. It's because of the Holy Prophet, that his name has been directly mentioned many times in the Book of Islam.
That's
so
right.
There is a lesson for us that we have to follow all these religions, all these prophets, and respect them as much as we can.
As we could see in the Islamic Republic of Iran, there are so many Christians living. And on these days, from December 25th to January 1st, they are celebrating the celebration in their own churches in Tehran, in Yazd, in Shiraz, and in different places in Isfahan, all around the Islamic Republic of Iran, shows how much the also religious minorities like Christianity are respected in an Islamic land, the Shia Islamic land like Iran. Thank you, my Sayyid Mursa and Sayyid Mohsen, for your presence in the program. And again, congratulations on the birthday anniversary of Isa ibn Maryam, Prophet Jesus Christ. And also congratulations to all our Christian brothers and sisters all around the world. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. This was Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Shia and Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
عيسى بن مريم عليهما السلام بشر أتباعه بنبي يأتي من بعده اسمه أحمد، وأحمد هو محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم.
عيسى نبي الله قال مبشرا. بعدي سيأتي أحمد ومحمد
معشرا وصفوا المحمد بالقبيح قد كان أولى أن تقولوا كالمسيح من كان يتبع المسيح يقول ما قد قاله عيسى بأحمد من مدينة.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Following the 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol, American social media platforms have been scrutinized for amplifying calls to violence, spreading misinformation, and serving as an organizing tool for the rioters. We're prepared for you an article written by Kerry Paul. The piece is titled Breeding Grounds for Radicalization. U.S. Capitol Attack Panel Signals Loss of Patience with Big Tech. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Kerry Paul's article. U.S. House Select Committee in investigating the 6th of January insurrection at the Capitol has ordered several social media firms to hand over data relating to the attack, a significant step towards transparency that could have broader privacy implications. The committee on Thursday, 13th of January, subpoenaed Twitter, Meta, Alphabet, and Reddit for private messages exchanged on the platforms about the attack, as well as information regarding moderation policies that allowed communities to remain online, even as they incited violence in early 2021. Congressman Benny Thompson, the chairman of the House Select Committee, said the committee was seeking to answer two key questions: how the spread of misinformation contributed to the violent attack, and what steps social media companies took to prevent their platforms from being breeding grounds for radicalizing people to violence. The subpoenas mark an escalation in the committee's efforts to get answers from the technology companies. Benny Thompson added in his letter that the subpoenas came after months of engagement with the firms and that the four companies had so far ignored requests for information. He said, "We cannot allow our important work to be delayed any further." The panel in August asked 15 technology companies, including the four subpoenaed on Thursday, 13th of January, as well as TikTok, Snapchat, Parler, and 4chan, for records related to the riot. In letters sent recently to the technology firms, Benny Thompson lamented their lack of response. In a letter to Meta's chief executive officer, Mark Zuckerberg, Benny Thompson said that despite repeated and specific requests for documents related to Facebook's practices on election misinformation and violent content, the committee had still not received these materials. Meta claimed in a statement that it planned to produce the documents requested. Reddit also told The Guardian it had received the subpoena and planned to comply with the requests. Twitter declined to comment. Google did not respond to requests for comment. One of the representatives of these technology firms claimed, as Chairman Benny Thompson said recently, Facebook is working with the committee to provide the necessary information. Since then, Meta has produced documents to the committee on a schedule committee staff requested, and we will continue to do so. Following the 6th of January attack, social media platforms have been scrutinizing for amplifying calls to violence, spreading misinformation, and serving as an organization tool for the rioters. Last March, lawmakers grilled the chief executive officers of Google, Twitter, and Facebook about the platform's role in the Capitol attack on 6th of January. And in the months since, the major platforms have also claimed they are creating initiatives to curb the spread of misinformation through their products. But still, much about the content moderation policies of major technology firms remains black box, with executives slow to reveal details of how misinformation and hate speech is moderated and how many resources are dedicated to mitigating such issues. Now, increased transparency could come by means of subpoena. For lawyers, the problem came even more acutely into focus with papers leaked by the whistleblower Francis Hogan in October of 2021, which showed how Facebook failed to enforce policies that would rein in hate speech because they were detrimental to its bottom line. Speaking to Congress, Francis Hogan called for more transparency from Facebook and other companies, including an independent oversight board. In a letter to Meta's chief executive officer, Mark Zuckerberg, the Select Committee cited revelations from Francis Hogan requesting access to the company's internal analyses of the spread of misinformation and calls to violence relating to the 2020 presidential election. In particular, the House Committee requested more information on the Stop the Steal movement and how it was regulated. A Stop the Steal Facebook group amassed hundreds of thousands of members and was used to coordinate some of the actions on 6th of January. Imran Ahmed, Chief Executive Officer of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, said while Facebook eventually took it down, other related pages stayed online. Imran Ahmed said, "It is absolutely crucial to understand the decision-making process that led them to leave those pages online, how they executed enforcement of their policies against violence, encouraging violence, intimidation, extremism, and hate." Similarly, Reddit has been requested to provide information on its community R, the Donald. That group was banned from Reddit in June of 2020. But its community migrated to another platform where many actions of 6th of January were planned. Lawmakers were also seeking materials from Alphabet, the parent company of YouTube, because the video platform hosted significant communications by key players in the Capitol attack, including Donald Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, and rioters live-streaming their movements on 6th of January. Activists say the need to hold companies accountable for how their policies contributed to the Capitol riots should be held in balance with civil rights and privacy protections. Evan Greer, Deputy Director of Digital Rights Group Fight for the Future, said the subpoenas may bring up privacy concerns. Evan Greer said forcing companies to hand over private messages of its users could have major privacy implications. They said, "It's essential to remember that government surveillance and demands for data from private companies are primarily weaponized against marginalized communities. The white supremacists who stormed the Capitol deserve to be held accountable, but we should never cheer on expansions of surveillance or government overreach."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.